This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time, John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. John, it's always great to have you with us.
It's always great to be here, Greg. Thank you.
Let's start with the story that's certainly consuming most of Capitol Hill, where I know you spend a lot of time, and that's the story of Charlie Rangel, been in the House for 40 years until very recently. He was the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. Now today, the House Ethics Committee releasing 13 ethics charges against Rangel, stemming from wrongly trying to set up this Charles Rangel Public Policy Center in New York, not paying taxes on a place he's got in the Dominican Republic, not reporting money he's made from rent in New York City, and several other issues here. What do you make of the charges? Is it pretty much what we expected, or does it go even deeper?
Well, it certainly sounds as though it goes deeper. And again, we're touching on income tax evasion as well as improperly using his office to steer funding to a nonprofit. And again, if it isn't bad, it certainly looks bad. And please don't take my word for it. Talk to some of the House Democrats who are going to face the voters this year and are cringing at the thought that Charlie Rangel is going to be the poster child for their party in the midterm elections of 2010. With that in mind, if there is a plea deal in Congress, then I have to say that Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer run the gamut of political acumen from A to B. The idea that Republicans countenanced Mark Foley for doing things, while despicable, were far less serious than this. And then coming back and saying they countenanced Charlie Rangel without demanding his resignation or at least his retirement is beyond the pale, and they will pay a very dear price for it in the fall. But again, we don't know the details on this. All we hear so far are the fulminations of the 80-year-old Rangel, who insists he's going to fight and will stand for re-election in his Harlem district.
John, talk a little bit more about rank-and-file Democrats here. Why would ethics charges, and granted quite a few ethics charges, against Charlie Rangel, who represents a district on the west side of Manhattan, have an impact on a race for an embattled, supposedly moderate Democrat somewhere in the Midwest, for example?
Well, the whole idea is that Speaker Pelosi, when she assumed the gavel in 06, promised the most transparent and ethical Congress in history. And we have been hearing about these charges against Congressman Rangel for a number of years now. The House has dragged its feet in dealing with him, or at least addressing the charges. This is something that through national news and the net has metastasized into a major issue. Why is it that a moderate congressman in the Midwest would suffer from this? Well, why would a Republican House member in, say, Pennsylvania or Michigan suffer from Mark Foley not being punished right away and his transgressions hidden and swept under the rug in 06? I don't know, but a lot of them did lose, and Democrats won the House after that. They must be aware of this as they deal with Mr. Rangel. I would add one more thing on this. Again, as I said, it doesn't matter what I think. It does matter what the Democrats who are running for office say. And Brad Ellsworth from Indiana, for example, Democratic House member and U.S. Senate candidate, says he will return $12,000 in donations from Charles Rangel, or rather turn them into a charitable donation. Dan Maffei, congressman from Syracuse area, New York, who once worked as a press secretary to Rangel, has received a lot of money from him. That's become a major issue in a very tough re-election battle for him. I think Democrats are already feeling the heat from Rangel.
John, let's move on to another major controversy that's out in Arizona. It was today, actually, that the full force of Senate Bill 1070 was supposed to go into effect, but a federal judge named Susan Bolton, appointed by President Clinton, decided that really the most important and some of the most contentious provisions of the bill did not meet muster. They conflicted with the federal prerogative on immigration enforcement. And now, of course, the state of Arizona is filing suit on appeal with the Ninth Circuit. Most expect this to go all the way to the Supreme Court. Your thoughts on what we've seen in the last 24 hours?
Well, I think that what this has done, for one thing, is guaranteed the reelection of Governor Jan Brewer, a major force behind the bill and someone who has been ubiquitous on television and in the newspapers and online defending Senate Bill 1070. In addition, this has galvanized the forces around the country who feel that illegal immigration is a major issue, that Congress has done nothing about it, beginning with seeing the fence on the border through to completion, and that the responsibility has been up to the states or to localities, as it was in parts of Virginia a few years ago. When the courts all of a sudden say that they can't deal with a problem that the federal government refuses to deal with so far, well, I think you're going to have a lot of people, and they are going to vote accordingly. In the meantime, when I spoke to Governor Brewer, she told me that the state had hired private counsel, that they were arguing the case. I assume they're going to appeal it all the way up to the Supreme Court if need be.
John, let's move to national security now and the war on terror. One of the big issues over the past several days has been this 91,000 document dumped through the WikiLeaks website. The administration, for the most part, said that it wasn't pleased with it, but didn't have a whole lot to say in denunciation of it in real strong language. That changed this afternoon with Secretary Gates and Admiral Mullen at the Pentagon using very strong language. Admiral Mullen saying that Julian Assange, the head of this WikiLeaks organization, may already have blood on his hands for the names that have been released and revealed that work in connection with U.S. forces. What's the long-term impact of this?
Well, first of all, I have a lot of respect for Secretary Gates and Admiral Mullen, and I just find it strange that they should talk about blood on the hands of the WikiLeaks founder only 3 days after the president's top spokesman, Robert Gibbs, was telling us that this is not like the Pentagon Papers, that a lot of this has been out in the media already, and that others are on the ground reporting, not statements of policy. It's a slight change, but a significant one from the different voices of the administration. That said, I tend to agree with the administration on this one, that this kind of material released, albeit material that's already known, cannot serve to support the effort that the president has put in Afghanistan and that he's committed the U.S. to very strongly.
John, last 20 seconds. I need a prediction from you. Who will be the two nominees for the Michigan gubernatorial nomination? The voters there head of the polls on Tuesday.
It really doesn't matter who the Democratic nominee is because they have never been able to recruit an A-team candidate. The Republican nominee will be the first Republican governor of the Water Wonderland in 8 years. There are four strong candidates running. And the winner who will come out on top is two-term State Attorney General Mike Cox.
We'll see if you're right. John, thanks so much, as always, for being with us.
Finally praising the rain that comes down and at least temporarily takes the heat and humidity out of Washington. I'm John Gizzi on Capitol Hill.
John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.